Hello and welcome to Think Rant. Today is the 8th of March 2012 and I'm your host John Saylor, and joining me as usual are my two regular co-hosts. Say hello, Stephen Brett.
Hello.
And welcome, Trevor J. Williams.
Hello.
No sexy intro this week. I know I kind of, it's with me, it's all or nothing. I went out of my way last week and then nothing this week. So I apologise. And talking of apologies, I must start with an apology. Last week I started the podcast. I made a comparison between Lord Carey, the ex-Archbishop of Canterbury and head of church. I made a comparison between him and a semen-encrusted wank sock. Now, I want to actually apologise for that because it was bang out of order. And so all wank socks out there, I am really, really sorry because, you know, all you do is give. You know, you don't judge people. You're always there to receive love.
They do take a fair amount as well.
They do take a fair amount. And I thought, actually, it was a very poor comparison. So I apologize for all wank socks. And please keep up the good work. So that's it. Steve's obviously laughing in a way that tells me that he didn't listen to last week's podcast.
Ah, then you won't know.
I won't know what, Trev?
I won. I had a 1 in 3 chance.
This is
true. And I spotted the fake.
He spotted the fake.
Well done, Trev. Well done.
Oh, yeah.
And also, while I remember, I want to congratulate Trevor for his cartoon.
I tried to see your cartoon, but at the time, my internet was down.
Probably the server. It had been crashed by Feringula.
I was changing my internet provider, and I just got back online at home tonight. So actually, I haven't seen your cartoon, Trev.
I've drawn another one, but it's about Baczynski.
And
I know.
The goalkeeper for Sparta Prague.
It's very dodgy. The guy will just sue you at the drop of the hat. Now, I've managed to fox him by having absolutely nothing. I have no income. I have nothing of any value. It would serve him no purpose to sue me. But I guess I'll probably send it to the 21st floor again and see if they fancy.
Because not only did he get his cartoon published on the 21st floor, which is, you know, good stuff, but also, after a little help from some high-placed friends of his, he managed to get it on...
Have to be ginger.
He got it on Feringula as well, so yeah. Well done, buddy. Yeah. So it must have been good for PZ to put it up there and say that, this is actually quite funny. So if you look at the cartoon, are you going to bother looking at it now or are you going to do it later?
I'll do it later.
Okay, fine. Well, we won't bother discussing it then. We'll just
let me have a look at that to discuss it. you know, if that's what you want to do, give me a link.
This will be great radio. Though.
Yeah. Okay. Let's skip this.
Well, this could be edited out, can't it? But yeah. I know you don't edit,
but
that, John.
No, there's no editing.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the reason there's no editing is John's a trendsetter rather than a trend follower, and everybody else is doing their editing and putting music links in and things, but no, not John. He prefers to be a maverick, a bit of a crazy bastard, and. Skeptics with a K today, on the Thursday the 8th of March, released a raw, unedited version. I think, largely influenced by us and by John's very, very brave stand. So it's starting to pay off.
Yeah. It's. I think that's the highest form of flattery, is imitation. So thanks, guys.
Yeah. Particularly a kind of informed imitation, where they don't actually mention us by name, but we know they know. Yeah.
It's fine, you know, I mean, it's not going to upset us, I don't mind it at all. You know, if they don't want to bother mentioning us by name, I can cope with that. So anyway, I got my, hang on, I'm just going through my notes. Right, okay, I got my wank sock apology out of the way. Who wants to start this week with a story? Whilst we can always rejoin your cartoon once Steven's found it online. So Trev, have you got a story you want to start us on?
Yeah, there was a brilliant headline pointed out to me a week or two ago. Poll: Santorum comes from behind in Alabama three-way. I'm sure you know it's all about the votes for the Republican nomination. But Alabama three-way.
Great. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like something straight off the Alabama tourist board, doesn't it? Come here for a three-way. Excellent. Fair enough. So, okay.
Oh, and there was also a brilliant clip of Nick Clegg dropping a C-bomb. Did you guys catch that?
No, missed that.
On the BBC, there was an interview. And it was we can imagine that he was starting to say the word country and just changed tack, you know, and decided to start a new sentence.
Actually, Trev, I've been writing his speeches for him.
I was going to say, that's always going to be a potential source of problems, you know, when you can't just cut some words halfway through the middle because, you know, you're going to leave yourself open to, that kind of thing. So what, he went for country and then went off on attack after that. Someone interrupted him, did they?
No, he just changed his mind and started a new sentence, which made it sound like he had just dropped C-bombs, talking about young people. But I think that's Nick Clegg following your lead and being unedited. And again, of course, he's come a cropper there, unfortunately. He doesn't have the savvy to pull it off.
No, and, we've got our limit of one per week, you know, and he's probably got a much more stringent limit than that, you know, like one per lifetime. In fact, that's it. He's used it up. His political career is over.
I think that was true a while ago, let's be honest.
Yeah, I've just watching things like 10 o'clock live and stuff like that lately, all I could do is feel pity for him now. You know, he's just been, he went for the sacrificial lamb thing and now he's just he is a foreskin, isn't he? That's the only thing I can think of, is he is a foreskin. He is this thing that exists, but doesn't actually do much. He just hangs around there. And, you know, to be honest, a lot of people are quite happy just to get rid of him.
And what you're saying is, moving aside, there's still a bell end underneath, yeah?
Well, okay. Yeah, why not?
He just makes wankers comfortable.
So, I just feel sorry for the guy. I'm not going to talk about Lib Dems. We'll save that for when I've done my research. I've got a damning report on them, which I'm putting together, which will interest you.
Crikey.
But that's not this week. That's maybe next week. We'll see how much time.
I know. Well, there's some news that I was hoping to do last week. You've got last week's up. Sorry, the fortnight ago we did one, and that was up as last week's. So this actually happened on the 26th of January, I think, quite a while ago. But it was that Diane Abbott has quit a cross-party abortion group because the government are trying to sneak in the abortion counselling deal through the back door.
That was quite a while ago, wasn't it? Yeah, I remember that.
Explain a bit more, Trev, or are you able to? I'm sorry, Diane Abbott was in what? She was in the anti or the...
She was like a think tank, cross-party sort of abortion group, wasn't it? And because the government are pushing down this line of bringing in anti-abortion people into abortion counselling, etc., she quit, isn't that right, Trev?
Yeah, I just thought that was a remarkable thing, because sometimes she can turn up on weird, soapy daytime TV kind of programs, being a bit of a rent-a-gob.
Sometimes she appears up on Newsnight as the lightweight, you know.
Yeah, the chummy one.
Yeah.
The one who'll try and say something a bit funny. But this is her actually showing her politics and doing a damn good thing. And I thought that we had the opportunity to give her a shout out for that, and I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, and actually, during the Labour leadership debate, I actually kind of fancied her. Not
really,
as in... No, not as in that kind of fancied her, but, I thought I preferred her, I think. But I'm not a Labourite, so I don't give a toss, really. But if there's another Labour leadership contest soon, I'll be backing her. There you go.
Cool.
So, sorry, was that all you wanted to say about that, Trev?
Yep. Yep. No, it was just that I hadn't heard it get a lot of coverage. And it's kind of worrying that it might not be the only thing they're going to try and sneak through the back door after it's failed in Parliament.
Hmm. Exactly. So well done, Diane Abbott. But I was Steve. Another thing you missed last week, I was praising Michael Gove.
Yeah.
Don't worry, it didn't last long. It didn't last long. Steve's face.
Shut your filthy mouth.
Steve's face. He looks at me as if I was filthy, as if I just
Santorum,
as if I was just buggering a child in front of him or something. I don't know. So I'm going to launch into our friend Harold Camping. Haven't heard from him for a while.
Hi, Harold.
Hi, Harold. How are you? Have you got a date for us?
Wow.
Need to pack up all our shit.
So we've talked about Nick Clegg, and now another completely spent force.
What's happened is Harold's pitched up, and he's not going to give us another date. He's come to the conclusion that what he did was sinful, and that...
taking people's money?
No, making predictions. Making false predictions.
Okay, sorry,
sinful.
Yeah.
Taking people's money is fine. That's par for the course. What he had to say, basically, was that what we did was wrong. My predictions were completely wrong. I'm a complete dick for getting it wrong. However, a lot of good came out of it. So go on then, Steve, right? Or Trev, I don't care.
However, make sure you've got your bags packed.
Okay, I'm just going to... Neither of you have seen this story, have you? Because I literally grabbed this on the way home. It was in the New Humanist, okay, right? Now... If you're just imagine trying to get into the mindset now of Harold Camping, okay? I know it's not easy, okay? But imagine you're him. How would you spin his failure to predict as a positive thing? Don't get creative, Steve.
Because it's God and he does what he wants.
Because God will not be tested. That's where it is.
Yeah, you're both kind of close. Basically, he said that. It's all down to God. And what's happened is, because of the failed prediction, more and more people have been talking about the Bible. So that's a good thing.
Brilliant. You could say that. Well done, Harold.
So he really took that there's no such thing as bad publicity thing and really, really ran with it.
He did indeed run with that, didn't he?
Yeah. So there you go.
So yeah, not to the course, you know, you've conned hundreds of thousands of people out of hundreds of millions of dollars. At all.
And just to finish, he said, "We tremble before God and we humbly ask him for forgiveness for making that sinful statement. We are so thankful that God is loving and he will forgive us even his sin." Now, this is the thing I don't like about it, is he's asking the wrong person for forgiveness. Surely he should be asking the people he took all their money from.
Is he paying them back?
There's nothing about that. I take it he still has money. He still has his radio network, so he must have a couple of quid. Surely he should be flogging it all off to make amends and replacing all of the money that people gave in the belief that the world was going to end. So, we'll see. I mean, hopefully this means he's never going to make another prediction. He's made three. They've all gone wrong. This should be the last that we hear from him.
I can't believe that spin. That is just... sheer massive brass balls on there.
Well, you know,
it's like advertising like a dingo sanctuary on DVDs of A Cry in the Dark.
The thing is, he's 90. He doesn't care. I mean, 90-year-olds now don't care about shitting themselves on the bus. So, you know, it doesn't matter. He doesn't care anymore about what anyone thinks of him. He's just, all he cares about is, you know, making sure money still comes in to the coffers. Just quickly, sorry, have you got something, Steve?
Not about Harold Camping, but I do have a story, but you carry on, John.
No, go for it.
Far be it for me to interrupt you.
No, that's it. You go for it, mate.
Well, I just, you know, touching upon this because it's something which has bombarded the internet the last few days, which is the Kony 2012 video.
Now, I haven't seen this, but I've been reading the video. Yeah.
Because, as I said earlier, I didn't have any internet connection, so trying to watch a 28-minute film is pretty impossible. However, obviously, it's a very interesting story, in so much as we have a charity, I believe, called Invisible Children.
This is correct.
Who produced a very well produced film regarding a chap called Joseph Kony in Uganda, and talk about his Lord's Resistance Army, which is primarily made up of children. Now, this has been doing the rounds quite a bit the last few days. It's just been absolutely massive. Every man and his dog has been posting it. But, you know, I guess really now, after a couple of days, after people have had a chance to look at it critically, then some other stories are starting to come out, which kind of makes it look, obviously, not great for the charity. I mean, obviously, this man is not a good man. You know, he's caused a lot of children's death and done some lot of bad things. But the charity seems to be a little bit murky in terms of its finances, shall we say.
Mm. I've written a kind of response to it as well, so let me know when you're done.
Go for it, Trev. You jump in there, because I haven't seen the video.
Have you seen the video, Trev?
I've seen most of it.
Okay.
I skipped over some bits when it became obvious where it was going. Okay, the video's got some dodgy things in it from the very beginning. Now, obviously everything about Coney seems to be true, and he's a very dodgy fella, but there were things like the director's family life was inserted early on, and it looked like he was setting himself up as some kind of hero. And sure enough, later on in the video, the kid was filmed saying, "When I grow up, I want to be just like you, Daddy." Now, I agreed that something should be done about Coney, but what? There have been many attempts to arrest him, and some outright attempts to kill him, but he's protected by children. So how many dead and mutilated children would it cost, do you think, to have him arrested or killed? And is that a formula that you're happy to tinker with? And then who'll replace him? He's not a supervillain. He can be replaced by anyone in his network of, well, people feral enough to help him and therefore evil enough to replace him. And he's got a human shield of abused children. And yes, most of us were aware that this sort of shit happens. The training of children into soldiers. We knew that happened in Africa. And okay, so if asked, we couldn't have given you the name Joseph Kony. So fucking what? You think he's the only African dictator committing these kinds of crimes? Grow up. That said, I think some of the snarky responses may be a bit worse than unhelpful. Some people have no idea that things are complex. You know, there's a day of action idea, and that's interesting. But if it provokes a response, I think it would be only correct that the UN strike team, or whoever it is that finally take him out, films the aftermath, counts up the dead, the missing, and the horrifically injured children, and gives that evil receipt to the pressure group, and keep adding to it every time more news is gathered about the various power grabs that will be done to replace him. I'm not saying Coney's a necessary evil, nothing of the sort, but these decisions are not clear-cut. There's a terrible cost, and I think most people don't want to accept that responsibility. That's why we have elected officials, whose job it is to allow their souls to take on that poisonous burden. I'm not saying that I think anybody should shut up, but there's judging and guilt trips, and there's the look-at-me, ma, I'm saving kids in Africa mentality that's doomed to failure. A poorly planned US-led foreign intervention? Where have I heard that before? And this time we're talking about taking out one piece from a terrible conflict where there are no good guys. There you go, Ugandan government. Problem solved. Now you can get back to your torture, election rigging, child labour, police-sponsored murder, execution of gays and Democrats, and massive, massive corruption. There's an international scale of 0 being ultimately corrupt and 10 being totally transparent, and Uganda scores 2.4 on it. So this crazy idea that let's just arrest this one guy and then everybody in Uganda will be happy is so simplistic, it's insulting.
Part of the issue is, of course, is that he isn't even in Uganda.
Right.
You know, the LRA is apparently pretty much a spent force in Uganda. The Ugandan authorities, military, have done quite a job in driving them out, and they've actually, you know, crossed borders now and are in, I'm not sure which country it is, but obviously an adjacent country to Uganda, which is where he can actually be found. You know, people know where he is, but obviously, as you said, Trev, you know, are people willing to pay the price?
Well, I seem to remember that President Obama sent over a couple of hundred of American troops to go and help find.
This is correct.
Find as in the way that they found Bin Laden, probably. Found. He's been found with a bullet in his head. What a coincidence. No luck. I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head there with your cynical but realistic look at the problems in Africa at the moment. You know, let's be realistic about this.
I know about Africa. I've seen Blood Diamond.
Which is a great film.
Sorry. Yes, it is. But the African thing is so complicated, we're not going to know. But don't judge us for not knowing, for God's sake.
Yeah, it just seems to me that this documentary is more of an ego trip than a humanitarian effort, which is... And it's the usual thing on Facebook. It's very easy to reshare a link to bloody some YouTube video, but it's the, you know, it's not really doing anything about it.
Well, no, it makes people feel good.
It does. It's kind of like praying, isn't it, Steve? You know, some people pray and say, you know, this will help. So I'm now going to do the regular feature because I need to lighten the mood because Africa always depresses me.
So, is there a jingle?
No. There's no fucking jingle for this.
That's the jingle.
That's the jingle. There is no jingle. I'm very sorry about that. One day there may be one.
Can Trevor spot the fake
this week? Yay! Because he managed last week. So, the scores are, I'm winning, and you two are losing, as usual.
The scores are, well, basically, I'm great, you guys suck.
I am.
Trev slightly sucks more than...
I am first loser.
Yeah, yeah, Steve is definitely first loser. Okay, now, I got to admit, guys, if I may be so bold to say...
Is this your best one yet?
This is definitely the best one I've ever done.
Is this the triple Wang story that I've always dreamed of?
I couldn't find enough Wang online to pull that off, unfortunately.
They were brilliant.
Do you just do a Google search now for news Wang?
As I said last week, if I did that, my internet history at work would become a liability. Okay, so here we go. Who goes first this week, by the way? Is it Steve?
I guess so.
Just so I get that sorted ahead of time. Right. Story number one. European news. A Frenchman on trial for chopping off his love rival's penis gave a detailed account of the act to a court and told of the uneasy silence that followed as they awaited an ambulance. Blaise Fragion, 38, admits that in October 2008, he knocked out the victim, named only as F in the court documents, with a blow to the head, severed most of his penis with a razor, and flushed it down the lavatory. Fragion, from the French Mediterranean post city of Marseille, said that he lost it after M came to brag to him that he was having a relationship with Maddo, his partner of 14 years and mother to two of his children. When I came back from the lavatory, I came back to Earth, he said. He called the emergency services while his wounded rival was prostrate in a corner, applying pressure to staunch the bleeding from his mutilated groin. We didn't talk to each other much. There was lots of silences. I told him not to worry, that he wasn't going to die. I was a complete mess in my head, said Fragion. When the emergency services arrived, Fragion said he cleaned up the blood as if his children were due home. He also wrote them a note to apologise for what he'd done and warned them that he might not be back for some time. Fragion faces up to 15 years in prison if found guilty of aggravated assault, and his former lover has returned to her original partner. Ah. Story number two. UK news. A fully grown man is told how he was mugged by a fox, which cornered him and forced him to hand over his dinner. Seb Baker, 29, weighs 15 stone, but was attacked by the common red fox as he walked home from the supermarket. The civil servant has revealed the wily fox, which had been sitting on a curb at the side of the road and followed him into an alleyway. There, he told the Sun newspaper, the aggressive animal leapt at him, circling him like prey and trying to snatch his shopping bag. Despite making attempts to escape, the fox persisted and carried out a sustained attack on the food he'd just bought from Tesco. Eventually, Mr. Baker claims he resorted to offering the animal his loaf of garlic bread, and the fox scampered off. Mr. Baker, from Kent, told the Sun, I had expected it to run away. I thought the fox would be scared by a 15-stone man, but he kept on circling me and then jumped up trying to grab my shopping bag. Eventually, I opened the bag and gave him the garlic loaf. He grabbed it and ran away. Wildlife expert John Bryant says, the best thing you can do is use a water pistol, because I carry one of them all the time. And finally, US news, a Nebraska woman has sold a 3-year-old McDonald's chicken McNugget that resembles President Abraham Lincoln for over $18,000 on eBay. The Sioux City Journal in Iowa, USA, says bidding ended on Monday morning. Rebecca Spate of Dakota City told them sold the McNugget to raise money for a drive to raise 15 grand and send 50 children to a summer church camp. She did not disclose who won the auction.
Bit of curry sauce, I bet that'd be well tasty.
Yeah. Basically, that's pretty much that story. She took it home and put it in the freezer for 3 years and then decided to flog it on eBay. So, you're up first, Steve.
Okay, brilliant. Where to begin, really? You see, the chicken nugget one, on a normal week, I'd say that's probably the fake, but with the other two just classics, I'm now sort of doubting. Let's see. The one about the first story, the thing which kind of makes me think that's a fake is the silence. Because surely there'd been at least some sort of faint mewling from the guy who'd had his penis chopped off.
Well,
which, you know, probably would have made you feel uncomfortable. But I'm not sure silence would necessarily make you feel uncomfortable.
It was only mostly cut off, wasn't it? Docked, maybe, is what we should call it.
I don't know if docked is the word.
You know, just as an aside, the question you have to ask there is, as a punishment, should the guy you chop, should he have to forfeit his bits, as in like a penis transplant?
Well,
to make him whole again.
No, I mean, you might be getting an inferior product, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and that's the one that she left to go to him.
Because you're
going to say, oh, this is a bit familiar.
Second story, man cornered by fox. Oh, dear me. I'm going to go with man cornered by fox as being the fake.
Okay, fair enough.
Garlic bread, it's the future.
Trev.
That's exactly the one I'm going for. I think that you've called him like the Master Baker.
Seb Baker was his name. Yeah. Master Baker. I didn't even think of that. He may be married. He may be Mr. Baker. I don't know.
No, it's a masturbator and garlic bread.
You've put why too garlic much in bread?
the catchphrase.
Garlic bread.
Peter Kay.
I'm not into Peter Kay. I haven't seen any of that.
You just see Mr. Fox getting home now, can't you? All right, love, I've got some garlic bread. Garlic and bread.
Okay, so you're both locked in then. You're going to both go for the sly fox. Okay, fair enough. Well, the first story, unfortunately, is true. A man did cut off his love rival's penis and spend some awkward time with him waiting for the ambulance. Story number two, the ones that you guys went for, the fully grown man being cornered by a fox. It's a true story.
But the thing is, I'm quite happy that's a true story because it's brilliant.
A man, 15 stone. I mean, that's, you know, how much is 15 stone? I'm 12. You know, my BMI is normal.
I'm 17.
Well, 3 stone heavier than you are.
Okay, fair enough. Well, all right, well, 15 stone. It's not small.
It's enough to kick a fox in the face.
Yeah, you must have been a bit of a sissy, let's be honest. Okay, so I'm sorry, guys, you lose again, which meant the McNugget story was the fake, in so much that there was no McNugget found with the face of Abe Lincoln. There was one found, apparently, that looked like George Washington. But it went for much less than that. So I thought
it must be true because 3 years later, if you still got a chicken nugget, there's going to be a weird beard growing around it.
So there you go. So, well done, guys. I'm sorry you didn't win this week, but, you know, we had fun anyway. Right, give me a story, someone.
I've got a story. Trev, you know how we very much would like to have a written constitution in this country. How we believe that, you know, it would be a document which would enshrine our rights and actually, you know, provide some sanity to the British political culture.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, how we're a little bit envious of our American cousins with their document.
Yeah.
Well, that was until the Attorney General this week started interpreting the said document of the United States in his own way. Basically, he was talking about the right that, you know, the president has to pick somebody out and kill them without any sort of trial of any kind whatsoever. And how actually it is legal, and there is no issue with it, to be honest with you. Apparently, let's have a look.
But had you been watching Frost Nixon the night before?
Well, I don't
Nixon
know.
Was saying, but whatever the president does, the fact that he does it makes it legal.
But basically,
what's some kind of divine command theory around the president?
It's that I can't remember the name of it now. Euthyphro, that's it. Because the president did it, that makes it right.
Therefore,
yeah.
It
I mean,
good.
And talking specifically as well about
Nixon
Americans
was wrong in that, by the way.
About American citizens as well. So, you know, Osama wouldn't have come into this so much, but it comes around from the case of what's his chops? Al. I'm trying to find his name now. Sorry. But basically, an American who was part of Al Qaeda, who was executed on say so of the president, and this panel of people who nobody knows who they are. There's no minutes or anything from, you know, documented from this meeting. They just basically say, "Yeah, we want that person dead," and off go the CIA or some other group to actually do it. So, but what I guess for me was concerning is the comment that he made, particularly around how around the Constitution. So I'm just trying to find those for you a second, sorry, which isn't great, I know. Talk amongst yourselves.
This is the point where if we got sponsors, we'd get an advert in or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, okay, here we go, okay? So I should quote. Some have argued that the president is required to get permission from a federal court before taking action against a United States citizen who is a senior operational leader of Al-Qaeda or associated forces. This is simply not accurate. Due process and judicial process are not one and the same thing, particularly when it comes to national security. The Constitution guarantees due process, not judicial process.
Right, so it's whatever the president happens to think you are due.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, so I was quite horrified by this, to be honest with you. Because there literally is, you know, it's called the executive branch, who, you know, basically, faceless people, faceless organization, just go and kill them. No trial. Not in a theater of war. Just, you know, sat at home, go shoot them in the face.
Yeah. But the thing is, that's somebody trying to interpret the document that they've got. And lots of people can have their own ideas on how best to interpret it, and they can argue it out in court and in the newspapers and stuff. In this country, technically, Queen can do whatever she likes.
Well, no,
now,
no,
we can be fairly sure that it'll be the last thing she does as head of state. But
absolutely, but that was my point about the about the Constitution. Is just, you know, you've got a document there which is, you know, a great document. It enshrines the rights of the people. Yet those rights can be whittled away by a lawyer who says, no, actually, what it means is this.
Yeah.
Which for me is obviously a great concern, because, you know, okay, yes, documents are open to interpretation, but I mean, I'm guessing that is not what was intended when that was written.
No, but the Patriot Act provided a whole bunch of get-out clauses.
Well, the Patriot Act was completely unconstitutional, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Trev.
Tricky stuff.
Give us a story.
Okay. I've got two Catholic stories. I'm not sure which one to go for. I know, I'll have the one I definitely know nobody else will have got, because I went to Newsbusters again. Those crazy bastards. It's hard to pick out which mental rant to go for, but this one is dramatic front page wash post story of lesbian scarred by priest scandal begins to fall apart.
Okay.
So on February 29th, the Washington Post created a scandal for the Catholic Archdiocese of Washington by dramatizing the denial of communion to lesbian activist Barbara Johnson at her mother's funeral. Reporter Michelle Boorstein painted an emotional picture of a Catholic daughter being publicly shamed by a priest at her lowest moment. But new details keep ruining the Post's report. Thomas Peters at Catholic Vote Today reveals that Johnson has publicly declared she's a Buddhist and not a Catholic. The Post is going to need to fill the corrections box. Johnson's mother and late father were lifelong churchgoers, said the original article, who scraped to send their four children to Catholic schools, said Barbara and her brother Larry Johnson, the forensic accountant who lives in Loudoun County. Barbara lives in Northwest Washington and for years taught art at Elizabeth Seton High School in Bladensburg, her alma mater. Now, the fella says, this implies Johnson saw herself as a gay Catholic, but her artworks website proclaims she considers herself a student of many things, from Buddhist philosophy to nutrition and alternative medicine, and she is a total believer in the notion that art works. Now recall how Boorstein falsely painted Johnson in Catholic terms from the first sentence. Back to the story. In the Washington Post, deep in grief, Barbara Johnson stood first in line for communion at her mother's funeral Saturday morning, but the priest in front of her immediately made it clear that she would not receive the sacramental bread and wine. Johnson, an art studio owner from the district, had come to the St. John Newman Catholic Church in Gaithersburg with her lesbian partner. The Reverend Marcel Guizano had learned of their relationship just before the service. He put his hand over the body of Christ and looked at me and said, I can't give you communion because you live with a woman, and in the eyes of the church, that is a sin, she recalled on Tuesday. The fella, the mental complaining fella, continues, does a Buddhist who's rejected Catholicism stand in line for communion? Does a Buddhist who's rejected Catholicism call what she's going to receive the body of Christ? Boorstein was played like a fiddle by Johnson. So that's what this twat is basically saying. But there's the possibility that this woman was trying to participate in her mother's fucking funeral. You don't have to be a Catholic to participate in a Catholic funeral. It's a sign of respect for the wishes of the deceased. There's so much misguided hate in the actions of that priest and in this sniping little troll trying to debunk the story. I remember at my dad's humanist funeral, we saw somebody at the back cross themselves. So obviously, we threw them out. And a bit of a kicking round the back. Anyway, at the funeral, the woman reacted with stunned silence. Her anger and outrage have now led her and members of her family to demand that the priest be removed from his ministry. Family members said the priest left the altar while Johnson, 51, was delivering the eulogy and did not attend the burial or find another priest to be there. You brought your politics, not your God, into that church yesterday, and you will pay dearly on the day of judgment for judging me, she wrote in a letter to Guizano.
Oh, so there's a bit of Catholic left in her then.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, it says that she's a student of Buddhism, so that she is studying it. So we have no idea from the story whether she's calls herself Catholic, Buddhist, or atheist, or whatever. But she knows how to talk to a Catholic on his term. Oh, but there's a horrible line following that. Peters added that he smells gay politics in the whole campaign.
Those dirty, filthy lezzers.
Yeah, how... What they horrible, don't wash. Grimy way to put it.
Yeah, oh dear. But, do you have any thoughts on it, Steve? Anything, you know, would you... You wouldn't deny communion to somebody, would you? If they just, you know, if they were just taking part in a...
No.
Yeah. So...
No, and, but know, I mean, Catholic priests have been. You look at the circumstances of the funeral and everything, you know, and you take it in those circumstances. But I don't agree with this, but this is the Catholic dogma, isn't it? Is that if you're not a Catholic, you don't receive communion in their church. So, for instance, I go to a Catholic church and I shouldn't receive communion there. If they knew I wasn't a Catholic, I wouldn't receive communion.
Can't they tell? Can't they smell you or something?
Well, evidently, apparently they can.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Well. If it was a gayer, they could anyway.
Or if you had gay politics, you support gay marriage, see, they'd smell that on you.
That's a good point. I do support gay marriage, so I would be sniffed out.
Yeah, I don't know where to go on this. I mean, I know that Catholic priests have been known to not give communion to divorcees.
Well, it is part of their doctrine. It is part of the guidance of their church. Is that, you know, if they know someone isn't I guess, in the right place in their eyes to receive communion, then they don't receive it. So I guess, you know, somebody who hasn't necessarily confessed recently. I mean, I don't know, I'm not Catholic, but
you know, so you I know. Mean, you could just be some random person who's never bothered before, walk in there, do the usual spectacles, testicles, wallet, and watch, and then receive it just because you don't look dodgy.
Yeah.
But it's deeply childish to pretend that they check that absolutely everybody must be Catholic before they carry on. If the deceased was Catholic and that's the service they want, then the ceremony is going to be Catholic. And if you were a loved one and you're going to be first in line, or, you know, and you're going to be in that line, then you're going to participate in the ceremony, because the ceremony is an important way of commemorating.
Well, what I would quite like to know, to be honest with you, is how many other gay people were in the line who actually received communion.
Yeah.
Potentially, you know. Yeah,
because, you know,
that's right. It was because it was a sin, not because she was a Buddhist. It was because she committed the sin of living with another
because,
woman.
You know, having said that, how many atheists were in that line, or agnostics were in that line, who received communion?
Yeah,
that day?
This is true.
Because, you know, I'm certain there probably were some in there who did. You know, what's the, you know, how do you make that decision?
Well, you know, I look at it that once you've gone through the confirmation process, you know, you come out of it however you come out of it. But, you know, you've done your time. You deserve a bit of wine on a Sunday. So, you know, fair enough. But, yeah, I don't know what to make of it. I mean, because, you know, I suppose they're going to be within their rights to refuse anybody, just like a shopkeeper doesn't have to serve anybody. But what a miserable bastard, you know, at a funeral.
But if you're taking on the responsibility of conducting a funeral, if you've got those kind of rules, then that's something that you should be making explicit before you accept that it's going to happen at your church.
And you should be vetting everybody.
I think you're absolutely right, Trev. I think, you know, if that priest had any shred of humanity about him, rather than being, you know, some sort of officious bureaucrat, as he appears to be, or theocrat, then he would have actually would have said to the woman before the funeral, you know, look, I can't give you communion because of X, Y, and Z.
Don't bother coming up, or, you know, don't get bent out of shape.
Yeah.
Yeah, instead of while the thing's going on, just going, boom, take that, Lezzer.
Dropping the bombshell, isn't it?
Yeah. It just seems like it was done in such spite.
Mm. So, talking of spite...
I'm sorry, I was going to say, just a final comment. Cool. You're absolutely right. The article, which is written... is even more spiteful, to be honest with you, and I think, you know, probably more reprehensible than the actual act itself.
Yeah, like a time when her mum just died as well.
You know, the language you used is disgraceful.
Okay, I'm gonna have to segue into a Catholic story, and it may be the one that I don't know that Trev has. I'm not sure.
Is it that the warden from Dad's Army has got a new hat?
No.
Of it's Cardinal Keith O'Brien.
Yeah, well, it is him.
He's the warden from Dad's Army. Somebody commented in a thread after one of the stories.
Actually, I'm looking at a picture of him.
It's astonishing.
the guy with MP. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Well, it's... Well, we've all but heard what he's had to say on it. He wrote an article, which... Was it in the Daily Mail?
Probably. That's the usual vehicle for such bile.
Yeah, he's basically...
He wrote for the Sunday Telegraph and then had an interview conducted by John Humphreys. That was it.
So what happened is he made some remarks in papers and he's been interviewed. But apparently now there's going to be a letter read out this Sunday coming, in Catholic churches, which is going to repeat his statement. Apparently they've toned down some of the language, but it's going to be read anyway, and the appeal is going to be made to all good Catholics who go to church that they need to oppose gay marriage. Now, I think this is a golden opportunity now for compassionate, caring Catholics to actually think, I can make a statement now and say, I don't agree with this. And they may be able to stand up in church or say something and say, this is bollocks, we don't agree with this. Yeah? therefore expressing that they don't agree with the dogma of the church. Okay. Now,
there is actually an open letter from the co-president of the Freedom from Religion Foundation encouraging that so-called moderate Catholics just leave the church now. It's not saying necessarily leave your faith, but this is what you're supporting if you actually still go to church. And unfortunately, it was written by the worryingly named Annie Laurie Gaylor, which is just coincidental, I'm sure.
Unfortunate, but, you know... So, but I want to know, and this is the, and this is going to be the test for me, okay? Apparently, we've been told that there is a very large number of Catholics out there who don't believe all this bollocks from the church. They're not all hateful, bigoted, evil people.
No, of course. Even I don't think that.
No, but how many of them are actually going to say something? Because I keep on being told that, you know, there's this large number of people who they have faith, however, you know, they're moderate, they're not like all these nutters, they're not like the Pope.
They'll probably write a letter to the Tablet, which is the Catholic newspaper.
What, all of them? One, you know, I'm just wondering how many people are going to make their views known. What if it's none? What happens if next week we're sat here and, believe it or not, no one's...
I can't believe it will be none. Or a nun.
Ooh, Steve's king of the puns this week. Congratulations.
Yeah, sorry. No, I can't believe it'd be nun. Just speaking from experience, obviously, of being within my church, the Anglican Church, which is slightly different because it's not quite as dogmatic as the Catholic Church. But, you know, there is quite vocal support for women bishops, for example, or... being able to ordain homosexuals as priests. You know, there is quite vocal support for that within the church. And I don't read Catholic newspapers. I don't particularly look at Catholic websites. So I don't really know much of what the sort of liberal Catholic theology
is. Trev's a real sucker for punishment. Like
yeah,
that.
So I just think that just using my church as an example, I would imagine that, yes, there probably is a group within the Catholic Church who are campaigning for this. I don't know how vocal they'll be, but, you know, I'm sure that there will be somebody step up and saying, no, you're wrong.
It's just I've been reading a lot of the coverage, especially since O'Brien's come out and made these statements. I've read a lot of the coverage from different papers, you know, not just, you know, the One Telegraph. I've read it in the Mail. I've also read it in, you know, The Guardian. But they haven't gone and found whoever this vocal group is within the church who is against this.
Is that just lazy journalism, though?
Well, maybe.
How much? What's really the point in finding a bunch of people who say, "Well, it's all kind of complicated, really," because we want to believe this stuff as absolute truth, but obviously we have to interpret that kind of thing. But it's not a headline, is it?
Fine, but surely, not being funny, they seem to, you know, pay lip service to balance in nearly every other circumstances. So I find it quite hard to believe that they haven't found one single person. I mean, and that's what I mean. I'm not just talking about the Telegraph and the Mail. In the Guardian, there's been coverage, and they don't seem to be quoting anybody from any group from within the church who are saying, you know what, no, we don't agree with this.
Do they need to, though? I mean, what the guy wrote. Listen to this as an argument. Imagine for a moment that the government had decided to legalize slavery, but assured us that no one will be forced to keep a slave. That's really an argument that he brings up. Like he thinks we're all going to be forced to marry up all gay-like. Perhaps he's worried that if you enter into a homosexual relationship, you'll be forced to marry the person you do it with, in which case I can see why Catholic priests might be nervous. But the guy doesn't bring up any actual arguments.
But let's be honest, Trevor. I mean, you know, taking this particular argument aside, there is no real good argument against gay marriage.
No.
Well, no, apparently the latest
I've got to be honest, Archbishop of York, when he came out and said, you know, about marriage being a tradition, blah, 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 it's nonsense. Absolute nonsense at the end of the day.
Well, it ignores history to start with.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't buy it, to be honest with you. You know, I love the old poster, which I'm sure everyone has seen, you know, I didn't have a gay lunch today, you know, I didn't do this, so why do I need to have a gay marriage? Marriage is marriage at the end of the day.
Well, his final argument was a naturalistic fallacy, really. The natural law teaching of what marriage is quite simple. It is natural for a man and woman to be together for the procreation and education of children and for their own mutual love. Right, so that means either any of these are sufficient, in which case the last point about mutual love allows gay marriage.
Yeah.
Or he means that all of it must be present. So anybody who can't produce a child within, 5 years, they must get an annulment. So couples with fertility problems, older couples, anybody with learning difficulties that prevent them from instructing their child educationally, they all have to get annulments because that's not what marriage is about.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, Trevor, you've hit a very good point there, and I think it hits the nail right on the head. You know, if you've got a couple who come to the church to get married who are in their 50s, 60s, and it's a physical impossibility for them to have children, should then the Catholic Church just be turning those people away? Yep. And saying, no, sorry, you're not going to have kids, so therefore, as marriage is all about procreation, sorry, jog on.
Well, yeah, and, you know, it's quite... bang on, both of you, with that one. But the answer is no, they won't, because that's not the real reason why they're against it. They're against it because they're a bunch of bigoted twats. Yeah. So, there you go.
I want to see that there will be an outcry from the Catholic populace, the Catholic flock.
Yeah.
Rather than them saying, they came for the gays and I said nothing because I was not gay. And then they came for the ginger and I said nothing because I...
Because we all hate the ginger and we were quite happy for them to be taken away.
Every slippery slope leads towards the ginger, you know that, man.
No, the only reason I think this is more important than just articles in newspapers, not everybody reads the same newspapers, not everybody bothers reading newspapers, because let's be honest, it's always yesterday's news. But this is a real opportunity now for real Catholics who are in the pews every Sunday, okay? These people obviously identify themselves as Catholics. I want to see how many of these people are actually going to stand up and say, no, I don't agree with this, and make a fuss. Because they're being because they're not just being given a sermon this Sunday, they've been preached bigotry.
Yeah, so given instruction as well.
Yeah, and given political instruction. So which obviously in the States would not be allowed because nonpartisan, the church receives... tax-free status, etc. But no, as I said, I'm just going to be watching very carefully this Sunday because I'm fed up of being told that there's a massive amount of people who go to church and they all think that all this bigotry is no good. And yet, I don't hear anybody actually saying that. So, we'll see what happens.
Well, there was a great Twitter response to it from somebody called Sam White. He said, I think I'm up too early. Just turned the radio on and it appears to be the 1950s.
There is a place, I think, for mockery and making light of these things. And I like that.
Oh, did you see in Right Minds on the Mail Online some tool called Mark Dooley? He did an article called Message to the Irish Bishops, Learn from Cardinal O'Brien or Resign.
What?
Yeah, I saw that.
Seriously, he says, that's why it was so refreshing to witness the Cardinal Keith O'Brien so stridently defend the sacrament of matrimony at the weekend. Wow. It's just utter delusion. And, you know, could you share the drugs, please, Mr. Dooley? Listen to this bit. Back in Ireland, not only do the bishops refuse to oppose this tide, if anything, they can be seen surfing the waves at its summit. Wow, surfing bishops. It seems he's a real Catholic, though, a proper one. One who doesn't look to justify his position with argument, logic, or reason, but just says, God told me. So now I fully expect to see him murder his children if they disobey him. Stone to death anybody who's committed adultery, and... with all those massive swathes of cloth the bishops drape over themselves, I'm sure there's no mixing of cloth. The other garments of diverse sorts, as a woolen and linen together.
They don't look like just cotton, to be fair.
They can't be either just pure linen or either just pure wool.
There's got to be some rayon in there as well. Rayon is of the devil. So, also, I'm going to jog on now. Did you hear the story of the Egypt Islamist lawmaker fired for the nose job?
No.
Here's the story from Yahoo News. It's the cover-up, not the crime, that leads to downfall, observers of political scandals have long noted. So learned newly elected Egyptian Islamist lawmaker Anwar el-Balkami, I'll call him Balkami from now on, who was unceremoniously booted from his ultra-conservative political party Monday after it was revealed that he'd undergone a nose job and lied about it. Balkami had previously claimed that the bandages on his face covered injuries sustained in a vicious beating, the New York Times reports. But doctors at the private hospital where Balkami received his plastic surgery spoke out against his brazenous lies. The newly elected parliamentarian faced a quandary, however. Balkami was, until Monday, a member of the ultra-conservative Noor Party, whose Salafist adherents eschew plastic surgery among other indulgences of modern culture viewed as morally corrupting. But his little white lie caused embarrassment to his conservative political allies, several of whom visited him in hospital, and ordered an investigation into the alleged beating. Nader Baker, a spokesman for the Noor Party, said that in expelling Mr. Balkami, the party was establishing a principle of accountability requiring public officials whose wrongdoing interferes with their duties to apologise and bear responsibility, something he said was common around the world but still new in Egypt. So basically, he'd had a nose job and then pretended he'd been beaten up. And then when people went to investigate his beating, they found out it hadn't happened, he'd had a nose job. So there you go. But hypocrisy, thy name is plastic surgery, apparently.
Hey, I found a brilliant story with the headline of Heart Drug Can Alter Racial Attitudes.
I've seen this. I saw the headline. I saw the headline.
It doesn't really... what the story reveals to me isn't what it goes on about. It seems to miss the point for me. It says, it's not a cure for racism, but researchers have discovered that a commonly prescribed heart drug alters subconscious racial attitudes. Tests on volunteers after taking the drug show they were less racially biased than those who took a placebo. A properly controlled test, the results did seem to suggest this. And the researchers say racism is founded on fear, and the heart drug used in the study helps damp down fear by blocking nerve circuits that govern the heart rate and the part of the brain linked with emotional responses. But that bit, the researchers say racism is founded on fear, that's the bit that seems to be totally backed up by this. You know, it's not like we're trying to use drugs to control the population, but the idea that anybody's got some argument about, you know, that their racism is totally legitimate and founded on something. It seems that this, the results of this study suggest that it is just that you're afraid of, somebody who looks different than you. There's a slightly dodgy quote: "Biological research aiming to make people morally better has a dark history." It's possibly the wrong word to use, but I'm sure they didn't mean that.
Hasn't Prince Philip been having a few heart problems recently?
Nice, trying to get him on that. That's a great idea. God, if he reads that story.
Right, we've got less than a minute to go. In fact, it's now an hour exactly. So, unless anyone's got a story, but I just wanted to say that this week I'm going to be reading Nothing Matters, A Book About Nothing by Ronald Green. This is the book that we had from Ronald, who came to The Last Skeptics. And I just wanted to promote it because he's a philosopher, cool. and I like philosophers. And I'm going to be reading the book, and hopefully, probably not next week, because I've just leafed through it and there's lots of words on lots of pages. So it might take me a while.
There are no pictures.
More there's cartoons no next time.
Yeah, there's very little. Yeah, more. He is starting to write his new book. I saw him tweet the other day. But more cartoons next time. But I'm going to read this. I'm going to give a review. Have you started it, Trev?
Get in touch, Ron.
Yeah. Can you give us a summary?
No, I dipped in and out of chapters that sounded interesting, and indeed they were. It's good stuff. But yeah, I think I'm going to have to get start from the beginning.
I'm going to have to compare notes or something.
Mm.
Okay, fair enough. And has anyone got anything else they want to talk about?
Nope.
Trev?
No, I'm done. I'm relieved to have not had a crazy mental episode. Or at least if I have, I've forgotten about it and won't find out until I listen.
Oh, no.
Listen back, Trev. Listen back.
It'll come back out in the edit. It'll be fine.
Great.
But on that note, well, thank you very much, guys, for joining me again this week.
And, cheers.
We got a heads up for listeners who are big fans of Steve. Apparently, Steve's going to be on a bit of a hiatus soon. Are you going to tell us about that quickly?
Just need to have a little bit of a break for a couple of weeks as I'm very, very busy with learning German and writing sermons. So,
are you going to be writing any German sermons?
I will be writing German sermons, no. But, unfortunately, because I am too busy.
You know,
I don't have the organisational skills of John. I'm going to have to...
just in case there are listeners that are interested, are your sermons going to be recorded? Are they going to be able to download them?
No.
Oh, okay. You try and help a guy out.
Cool.
Do you mean that if I want to listen to you, I've got to come to a bloody church?
Yes, you do.
Right, okay. Because it's not like Trev with comedy, because there's alcohol there, which softens the pain.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible. Oh, that reminds me. I've got my date for the Woosa Heat. It's not until June.
Summer. Summertime. A couple of Copperbergs.
And I'm in the same heat as Dean Burnett.
Oh, that's so worth watching then, yeah. What if you beat him? Have you got some kind of plan?
Cheers. Yeah, keep saying that. That's nice.
I'm just trying to build you up, mate. That's all.
What if he beats Dean? Yeah.
Sorry. When you beat Dean, how are you going to broach the subject with him?
Oh, Christ.
Because Dean's getting very tired, you know. He's at a disadvantage. He's going to have a baby by then, so, you know. Tired.
But then again, he's going to have new material, baby material.
Is he going to have time to write it down, though? I mean, you know, you're both fathers. You know, you tell me.
Hey, I have time to bloody do a podcast every week and stuff on the weekend, so. Okay, so yeah, people, what was your date again in June? Sorry, Trev?
4th of June, I think it is.
And where is it? Is it
Monday
chapter?
Night, a chapter, yeah.
Okay, so if
there's,
anyone.
There's something like 8 weeks of it. I've had a look at the lineup, and most weeks look like they're definitely worth going to.
But yours in particular, we want to encourage people to go to. And I'm going to try and drag Stephen along.
Cool.
Yeah, I'll be up for it, definitely.
There you go. So you're going to have at least two people there whooping and cheering for you.
I want to see this kind of, 8 mile comedy off between Dean and...
Yeah, that'll be so cool.
And Trev.
Oh, Christ.
Let's just build it up for people. That'd be excellent. Okay, right. On that note, we're going to wrap it up. Thanks very much for listening, people. We'll catch you next week. From me, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.